This podcast is part of the Podcavern Network. Check out other Podcavern shows at podcavern.com. Oneiric. Year 3, and a few weeks. I'm sorry, Deirdre. I hope you didn't think I'd bought it with a tree branch through the belly in a cold forest on Schritt 4. This must all have been worrisome for you, and even, I should imagine, for your mother. I've been visited by someone purporting to be some sort of law enforcement officer the day before last. It warms my heart that you tried to get someone to me from however many hatches away I find myself now. By the time the gentleman showed up at my door, he would have been much too late had I indeed been fated to bleed out on the ground. But I'm touched by the attention. Here's the Mass for old Pope Marcellus by Palestrina. Marcellus was in the chair for all of 3 weeks, poor sausage, but he did inspire one of the best settings of the regular Mass in the history of music. I'm not dead, D. I'll assume you're not too unhappy with that. I'm certainly glad enough of it myself. That tree did what it could. It really gave it a damned good try, to be clear. But in the end, I was a bit too tough for it. So now I'm here, more or less in one piece, and the custodian of a pretty fine sword in the bargain. Now, the way I see it, there are two questions you might want answered right now. Let's start with a really obvious one. Who was the child? The little girl who was recorded by the Omnibook saying this?
Daddy?
I have no idea, Deirdre, and that's the truth. I'd passed out. Indeed, I was already deep in the dreaming, doing what I had to do to answer your second question, and I didn't hear that little girl with my own ears. I was as surprised as anyone to find her piping up at the end of the recording. I don't know who she is. I don't know how she came to be there. I don't know where she disappeared off to. I don't know why she was addressing me as Daddy. Though I suppose she may have been talking to someone else. There is another possibility, but I'll let Val explain it later. Yes, Val is here with me. Well, not in this very room. We're in a house about 3 days out of the hospice where I convalesced a bit. We were quite kindly taken in by the owner. Val?
Yeah?
I'm recording a thing for Deirdre. Want to say hello?
Hi there, Deirdre. Don't worry about your cousin. He's going to be fine. I took care of him.
Don't steal my thunder, Val. There's a pal.
All right. Good tune you're listening to there. Can you cope on your own? I'm gonna go gather some nuts and fruits and things while it's still light out. For our trail mix. I saw a couple of likely groves not too far.
Do you want me to go with you?
Nah, I'm good. 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 Good.
Let Lana know you're leaving the house. Nope, he's gone. Now to your other question, Deirdre. How I ended up not dead was in fact the result of a fairly intricate little sequence. Here it is, if you're interested. And yes, as Val cavalierly mentioned, he figures into it. When I passed out, you see, I immediately found myself dreamside. I think the sleeping part of the dreaming can be loosely defined. I knew I was in trouble, so I first found my way to Herr Gustavo's hut. It took me a couple of days, of course, and all the while I didn't quite feel like myself. Herr Gustavo grinned when he saw me at the door, and waved me in. He seemed genuinely glad to see me, which I found absurdly touching. He was having coffee with Erich des Rätsels, whom I didn't recognize at first because he was a cat and not a wolf this time. Still tall and wearing armor, but definitely a cat. Even his voice was different. Smarmier, to be uncharitably precise about it. They offered me coffee, but I politely asked if they had anything stronger. Physically, there was nothing wrong with me, not in that place, you understand, eh? But I felt utterly tuckered out and, I don't know, defeated. Erich laughed. Not pleasantly. "Yes," he said. "You're not doing too well on another level of existence, are you? These things can be felt from level to level. They sort of echo. How about some of that plum eau de vie I got you for your birthday, Gustavo?" I didn't care for this strangely goading tone, and it was all in the way he spoke, never in the words. But I was in Herr Gustavo's house. So they plied me with a tumbler of frankly excellent plum liqueur, and I'll tell you, Dee, it felt good. "You have time here, Vance," said Herr Gustavo. "You can stay for a few days. We'll pray and train a little. You have a sword now, a good one."
"Technically, it's still just out of my grasp, mein Herr," I said.
"You will get there."
"You have time, yes," said the cat, "but not all the time in the world. You'll have to go back and attend to things at some point."
I took a sip of that marvelous eau de vie. Such a good name. I could feel it reviving me.
"Do you know anyone who could help you get out from under that tree, Vance?" asked Herr Gustavo.
There was only one answer to that, Dee. "There's this walker named Val," I said. "We keep bumping into one another."
"The fellow who's been teaching you about hatches?"
I must have looked a bit dumbfounded because Erich nearly killed himself laughing.
"We do keep abreast of things a bit here in the hinterland, dear boy."
They looked at one another, dubious-like. Then Herr Gustavo shrugged.
"Yes, I suppose we can send for him. He's a good enough sort, that Val. But one wonders about his credentials. He's, well, never you mind. Hardly matters now. Beggars can't be choosers."
Well, that was tantalizing, but I couldn't get another word out of them about Val. Not even when he arrived at the cottage 4 days later.
I was happy to see Val. It had been a while, even in the dreaming. Over supper that night, braised quail for Gustavo and Erich, seitan in Béarnaise for Val and me, don't knock it till you've tried it, Dee, I explained the situation back at the tree. Val was not impressed.
"We're cutting it a bit fine, Vance," he said.
He was frowning.
"I'll have to hire a car or something. I can't get over to you in time on foot."
Herr Gustavo was nodding.
"I'll pay, of course. I know how impecunious Valkers are."
Val stayed a week. I prayed and studied with Herr Gustavo, and we trained with a sword. Not my sword, obviously. Then Val left, and I traveled back to the waking world, back to the branch, right through me.
and got the shock of my life when Val wasn't there. He arrived a few minutes later, of course, in a medical shuttle, and believe you me, I needed it, Deirdre. Good old Val. And he didn't forget the sword. I've got it with me now. It's a good fit. The next 2 days are a void. Nothing. No dreaming, even. Not unlike death, I should imagine. I say I'm more or less in one piece, and that's because when I came to in the hospice, they'd cyboed sort of my entire chest. And whatever's coursing through my veins now is no longer blood. Blood. Blood is this whole thing for people, isn't it? It's important. So, that feels weird. Okay. It's okay. I'll make my peace with it. I can still eat. I don't run on batteries yet, the Lord be thanked. In a way, it's a blessing. I'm certainly more solid now. Know what I mean? Val and I, as I say, have been on the walk for the last few days. Hills and valleys, mainly, a brook here and there. Lots of grain fields, flowers, beautiful star-shaped blue flowers. Birds and squirrel-type rodents, snakes that move in packs, very unnerving. A church, the Ascension of Our Lord, Roman Catholic, where Father Yvon heard our confession and gave us communion. A peaceful, easy walk. Good weather, warm and dry. Good for the soul. We talked about a lot of stuff as we walked. Riddles. Bloody riddles. Hatches, naturally. And the dreaming. So that child? Val's idea is that she may have been in the dreaming. How is that possible, you ask? Well, Val talks about points of contact, but he tends to make shit up, and I think it's simpler than that. The thing about the dreaming, Deirdre, is once you've done it and spent what feels like a long time in it, it becomes a bit difficult to tell on what level of the world you're on at any given time. I mean, I think I'm awake now. I'm pretty sure of it, in fact, but then I feel awake in the dreaming, don't I? I have normal days in the dreaming where I walk around and eat and take a shower and, yes, eventually go to bed. And then I wake up again. And I have this feeling that I'm either on the same level as the one I was on when I went to sleep, or I'm back in the waking world. But bear with me here. Who's to say that when I wake up, I'm not actually one verdammt level deeper? With the best will in the world, Dee, I can't. I'm not even sure it matters anymore. Val, bless him, put it this way. The important thing is to reach the level where you're lying on the ground with a tree branch through your abdomen, whatever that level is, before you fucking die. And for now, that'll have to do. Of course, Val says that, and he tries to look all cool and collected as he says it, but I always get the feeling that he becomes a little antsy when he's not too sure how deep into the dreaming he actually is. If the little girl was in the dreaming, it kind of opens up the possibility that we're supposed to know one another. We'll see, eventually, no doubt. This afternoon, we arrived at a beautiful little log cabin in the middle of verdammt nowhere. A young woman came out, wearing overalls and a straw hat. In her early 20s, I should think. She asked us where we were going. "We're on the pilgrimage," I said. "Oh," she said, with a big smile that Now I think of it, I found awfully familiar. May the big long robe bring you somewhere, she said. I hadn't heard that in a while. There's a hatch not too far from here, actually, she said. But no one seems to use it anymore. I think it's broken. Val kind of perked up at that. He looked at the young woman with what I can only call suspicion in his eyes. But he wouldn't tell me why when I asked him about it later on. Anyway, we had dinner with this young woman. Her name is Lana. Roast brie with walnuts and a little sweet corn-style grain on the cob with beer. Oh, man. Beer. A sort of orangey honey on brioche for dessert. Delicious. She apparently lives alone, gathers the honey, tends to whatever buzzing critters make it, sells it at market in the next few villages over. She says she's Anglican, so I immediately warmed to her, regardless of how familiar her smile seems to me. That familiar smile rattles me a bit, to be perfectly frank. But Lana seems lovely.
Tomorrow, Val and I will check that broken hatch out.
I didn't even know that could happen, but I don't know why. I mean, hatches are partly machines. As am I, now. Ha ha ha. Okay, dear, I've talked a long time. I'm tired now. All my love to you and yours. I hear you got married. I'm happy for you. That Jasper fellow better treat you well. You treat him well, too, of course. You hear? You both have all my best wishes of happiness. Herr Gustavo sends his regards as well.
Notes to Oneiric, Year 3 in a Few Weeks, by Tevra Troy, Doctoral Candidate, Alternative Narrative Traditions, Université de Montréal, February 9th, 684. UDMID TT603782. Welcome to the second and final season of Oneiric by Vincent Lauzon. If the Doctoral Committee can forgive me this one boast, I found him. Lauzon is not particularly interesting, and he as a person will not be much more than a footnote in this project, but I did find him. Cliffhangers where the main character appears to be dying almost never get resolved with the actual death of that character, and Oneiric is not the story that will buck that trend. I have little to say about this episode. Val comes back to the fore, Gustavo and Erich react suspiciously to him, Val and Vons meet Lana, and Val reacts suspiciously to her. No real explanation is given for these reactions. I will also note that the notion of the dreaming becomes both more complex and fuzzier from this point on, but the Moorcock comparison still holds. In the coming weeks, I will make a few written documents available to listeners. An annotated outline in particular is quite illuminating about the author's somewhat random method of plotting. I will remind Oneiric listeners of Vincent Lauzon's newly rediscovered other podcast, The Moth Collection. I cordially enjoin you to give it a listen. The two stories complement one another, thematically at least. The Moth Collection makes manifest a favorite theme of the author's, which is to say that the universe is a mess of contradictions, paradoxes, and impenetrable complexity. Things not making sense are a feature, not a bug. An aggravating feature at times, I'll allow, but decidedly not a bug. The address is in the show notes.
Hi, everyone. I'm Tong.
I'm Sam.
And I'm Laura.
And we are
Disney Dummies!
Look, we know there are Disney super fans out there, but even the superest of fans could still be Disney dummies.
That's why the three of us are on a quest to watch every single animated theatrical release in chronological order, from Snow White all the way to whatever's out right now.
We dive into each movie in detail, talking about fun facts, talking about the animation, hit you with some hot takes, our favorite reviews on the internet.
We even talk about who fucks.
I still can't believe that's an actual segment.
So join us every second Wednesday for another episode of Disney Dummies.
And Pixar Pals when we finally catch up.
Yeah.
brought to you by the Fairy Tale Whimsical Depths of the Pod Cavern.